dramatised events. Characters and letters in this series were inspired by true stories from known historical facts and archive. A story of Irish whiskey. How three families saved Irish whiskey from extinction.
Well, what I'm opening is something that gives me a great thrill, I have to say.
Carol Quinn, archivist, Irish Distillers, has a job which she describes as being like Christmas morning, because she is forever opening boxes with records from the past 200 years. Of all the artefacts before her, which fill an entire room, it's the long thin book with the handwritten title, The Punishment Book, 1930, which grabs your attention the most.
Now, like any employers, they wanted to make sure that they were running a tight enough ship. And there were certain things, you know, that were dangerous. There were work practices that could end up in explosions if they weren't handled properly. And there was always the constant danger of fire. And looking through the punishment book, what is jumping out immediately is here's one, a worker smoking. Here is another guy at the wash still, smoking in still house. He's here at the spirit still, smoking in still house, smoking in lofts, smoking in still house. The still house seems to be where you go for the sneaky cigarette, definitely. But what is interesting is it's a different man every time. No name is cropping up here twice, because the punishment that you're getting, most usually looking down through this, is you're having your whiskey stopped. And that's something that you don't want. I'm looking at the different punishments here. Whiskey stopped for a fortnight, whiskey cut for 2 weeks, warning, next time whiskey to be stopped, whiskey cut 1 week, whiskey cut for 2 weeks. And this would just kill you if every day you saw all your friends and your co-workers lining up, getting their grog morning and evening, and you're standing there literally with your tongue hanging out, watching this. And it works. It works as a punishment. And what they're really not doing is they're not interfering with men's wages. And I think that's really important, because this is an era where the man is the breadwinner. People are having very large families. And to actually come home and say your wages have been cut, that's a very serious matter. You probably are living week to week on your wage. But at the same time, they're human enough that the punishment goes to the man. It doesn't go to the family at home.
So what are the top three types of skullduggery that would land a distillery worker with a punishment and an entry in the punishment book?
Rocking in at number three was drunk at work. And this is something that if you are surrounded all day by whiskey and you've had your whistle wet and you decide you wouldn't mind a little bit more, sometimes you went a bit far. And there's a couple of occurrences of found drunk. Now, if you're drunk and you decide to go for a little nap behind the stills, that seems to be okay. If you're drunk and you decide you want to get into an argument with a co-worker, that creates a problem in the workforce. So coming in at number three in the punishment book is drunk on the premises.
There was such thing as an official break at 11 o'clock and 4 o'clock.
Brothers Tom Savage, 82, and Dennis, 87, are former distillery workers from Cork Distilleries Company who remember the perks of the daily grog, which was a common practice across many distilleries at the time.
And the men that was drink would go over to the warehouse and they'd get their drink. Now, if you drink it, or if I drank it, you'd go down like that to so strong. But there was a man walking there by the name of Christian, and my father, naturally enough, he was Savage. But they went over at 11 o'clock and they got their drink. It was pure, strong rage. Like,
see, they'd fill a glass up and because there'd be people waiting again. So and then not one, so there'd be two glasses, would be equivalent to an 80 bottle. Or you going to town.
And at 4 o'clock, Christian was going up to the still house and the boys were giving him the tittle in the coat. And of course, by 4 o'clock, he was half gone. So he went over to the warehouse and so he came back and he said, "God, Mikey," he said, "I didn't get it at all." So I don't know. He said, "I'm going over now, aren't you?" So my father got it. And he came back and he said to, and Christian asked him, "How did you get on?" He said, "Oh, no problem." He said, "I got it. There's going to be trouble now, though," he said. So he went over and he said, "It's an awful thing," he said. "You gave it to a Savage and you refused a Christian. So that happened for a fact.
And what you would do very, very soon after you started work is you'd suss out who took the grog and who didn't, because, of course, there were a lot of teetotalers working in the distillery as well. And they would be very popular with their companions because they would give away their glass. So if you made a friend of one of these guys, you could possibly get two.
Daily grog, line up, man, line up. Orderly, please. Christian, Dawson, Duggan, McNamara, McMahon, O'Brien, O'Regan.
Just say yes. Come on.
As God is my judge, I don't drink. I'm a pioneer.
It's not for you. It's for me, your friend, who's covered for you when you were out sick. It'd be a sin to let it go to waste. Just say yes. Come on.
Tobin.
Yes, please.
What did you say?
I said yes, please.
Don't let Darcy corrupt you.
No, sir, but I'll take me daily grog today.
O'Donnell, Nocton, Brian, Landy, Bishop, Cashman, McGrath, Maguire, English, Phillips, Annie.
Now, another way of getting an extra glass or an extra drop of grog was if you did what was known as a dirty job. Those are things like cleaning the chimney, you know, that magnificent chimney that you can still see in Smithfield today. If you can imagine how quite grotty on the inside and dark and, you know, maybe claustrophobic, not a job that you'd want to do. But if you did it, if you clean that chimney, you got an extra drop of grog. The same thing with cleaning out underneath the massive copper pot stills, pulling out the spent coals and the ashes. Dirty, hot work. Down at the Middleton Distillery, a number of our retired employees told me that a constant thing is if somebody was cleaning up the grain store. Again, you know, it's a dirty job. It's very hot in there. You grains, chaff floating in the air, and the roof is quite low. It's backbreaking work. And you would gather all the dust into sacks, and you were entitled to your extra glass of grog for that.
So, I've been doing a dirty job.
So we can see.
An extra drop of grog, sir?
All right, McMahon. You're a hard worker, even if you sometimes exaggerate.
Thanks.
But you'd get some others sliding over at the end of the day, pulling out the bag of dust and debris, emptying it over their heads and going up to the foreman and say, look, I did a dirty job. Now, I'm quite sure the foreman knew what they were up to, but, you know, if he was in a good mood, he'd give them the extra glass. In number two spot, pilfering, and which is a very nice way of saying taking away the whiskey. Stealing whiskey and taking it off the premises. Now, while you're at work, I think it was kind of understood that you might, you know, fall victim to putting your hand out for a little extra glass or something, or taking a snifter when you shouldn't. But you see, if you removed it from the premises, you're not just cheating your employers, you're cheating the Inland Revenue. And that was a very serious thing. Taking whiskey off the site without paying duty on it was serious. And it could have resulted in the distillery being shut down, literally shut down overnight. So from what I can see, that is the only thing that you could do to cause you to be fired, was to remove a significant amount of whiskey off the premises. I'm looking at it here, and somebody in the spirit store, which would be the storage area, there's a lot of whiskey missing, and they just say dismissed employee.
But what were the Jemison cousins referencing earlier? What was the big crime committed by one of the distillery workers that landed them in the punishment book? Let us return to Turin House in 1966 and the meeting of the Irish whiskey families.
The problem Shane is referring to may not in fact have been dealt with in the punishment book, because it was beyond what anyone could have ever envisaged a worker doing, so there was no suitable punishment.
And because it was also a human error, there was no malice behind it. It was not as if the man involved, who was named Bill Scully, was drunk or anything like that, but it's fair to say he was overwhelmed, at least on this particular day.
What did he do?
Bill Scully was a local lad from Smithfield. He'd joined in the late 1800s. He started in the brew house, the first step on the ladder of distilling, and he did well. He rose quickly, in hindsight, far too quickly. He'd been promoted to the still house, the beating heart of the distillery.
But there were circumstances that day. The day in question, we know from looking back on our wage books that his fellow workers in the still house were all out sick, which was very unusual. So he was in the still house on his own, and this was a big responsibility. He was essentially in charge of this operation.
Well, Scully knew and understood the triple distillation process, which makes Jameson Jameson. So he should have first filled the first still, distill it, then the second, and the third. But he filled the second still before he'd emptied it.
Oh, dear God!
Bloody hell. Mistake isn't even a big enough word to cover what he did. What did you do to save the whiskey?
We had to dispose of it. 428 gallons of whiskey.
This is a colossal mistake, and this means that they've ruined two batches. Now, somebody else, you could have said, oh, just drain it and look, we'll heat it up again, it'll be fine. We'll sell it cheap. But not Jameson, because Jameson believed only in the highest standards and the highest standards of quality. So they said, dump the lot. We're going to take the financial hit, dump the lot. But obviously, they had to know what went wrong. And that's what's recorded here. And of course, the normal Irish thing would be to, I wasn't there, I didn't know. Like, we don't really want to point the finger at anybody, but it's too important. And they've written down the very last line, Scully was to blame. And because we have the full collection, we have the wage books, I was able to trace. And he was a man called Bill Scully. You know, he's young, he's inexperienced, the more experienced hands aren't there. And he makes this horrible, colossal error. Can you imagine your blood running cold knowing that all of this is going to be thrown away and it's your fault?
And what happened, poor Bill Scully? What was his punishment? Surely he lost his job.
So I went back through the records and he got sent back to the brew house, where he stayed happily for another 30 years.
A Story of Irish Whiskey is produced by lastcastmedia.com for Irish Distillers, with special thanks to our interviewees for their contributions to the series, in particular those at the Middleton and Bow Street Distilleries. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And for more information on Irish whiskey, go to irishdistillers.ie.